40 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha. Always streaming on the Civic Media app.
An Ohio jury has ordered a woman to pay damages to a football player that she had accused of rape.
Cleveland.com reports a civil jury has found a woman liable for malicious prosecution in a rape allegation she made against former Ohio State football standout Garyon Conley more than 5 years ago. The accusation against Conley came shortly before the 2017 NFL draft, in which he had been projected to be a high first-round pick. The 23-year-old woman alleged that he had sexually assaulted her in a Cleveland hotel room. Conley's attorney said the sex was consensual. He asked for just $300 in damages. The jury agreed. I'm Norman Hall.
Former Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is set to return to office. Some wonder if he'll use the opportunity to push legislation to erase some of his legal troubles. Netanyahu is on trial for corruption. I'm Jackie Quinn, AP News.
Everybody.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Home heating bills in Wisconsin are going up this winter. Experts say there are steps you can take to reduce the impact. Mike Moen has more.
The Energy Information Administration predicts that Midwest households that rely on natural gas will spend an average of $1,000 on heating bills this winter. That's a 33% increase over last year. Whitney Hayes of the energy nonprofit Elevate agrees the region will see cost headaches in the coming months.
We're expecting gas prices to continue to go up this winter because of things like the war in Ukraine, and we're still doing a lot of recovery from COVID and shipping and supply shock and whatnot. So
she advises that small things such as making sure there's air sealing around windows and doors can produce savings on your bill. And energy experts say electric heat pumps have come down in price and are now more reliable in extremely cold weather. David Kalata of the Citizens Utility Board agrees that heat pumps are a strong alternative to natural gas, but he stresses they still might be out of reach for low-income households and that policymakers need to offer more incentives to make them accessible to everyone. Meanwhile, he says maximizing these options will make a difference.
And if you take advantage of this program and then you seal cracks in windows and maybe install energy-efficient light bulbs, all of that works together holistically.
For those worried about their heat being disconnected this winter, most Midwestern states have cold weather rules, which require utilities to offer a payment arrangement to avoid that scenario.
Budget billing programs don't save you money over the course of a year, but they smooth out your payments, so you pay less in the winter and more in the summer.
Mike Moen, Wisconsin News Connection.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell.
Hey, this is Matt from Design Garden. Remember when the internet was new? Back then, you had to leave your house to start a business. Companies used to pay programmers bags of cash to get online. Now, small businesses can get online with a Facebook business page, or Squarespace, or Google My Business, or WordPress. But which tools should you use? Can you afford to go down the wrong path? Design Garden uses modern tools to build your website the right way. Find us online at design.garden. Again, that's design.garden.
Up North News Radio is Wisconsin's new choice for progressive talk about important state issues, from the team that brings you the news through social media, newsletters, and here on the radio. I'm Pat Kreitlow. Join me weekday mornings from 6 to 8 a.m.
It's Friday.
Oh, it is Friday.
It was a short week, and it still feels like it was a long week. And we did it!
We did. Well, we're almost
it. We almost did it. But we did it. We lived to tell about it. We're having fun.
Yeah. All kinds of fun things planned for today.
Listen Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. for As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry. Right here on the Shaw 101 FM and WAUK 540 AM.
We have to really understand how critically important a time this is. Time for talk is over. The time for action is now. Because my voice has always been and will continue to be for people who don't have a voice.
Tune in to the Earl Ingram Show every Monday through Friday from 8 a.m. to 11 a.m. Only on WAUK 540 AM, 101.1 FM, The Shaw.
I'm looking at the phone lines. I'm seeing some familiar faces. Once in a minute, Gene of Eau Claire.
Well, welcome back, Matt. I really miss you. We've been missing getting woke every morning, but now we'll get woke in the afternoon.
Once in a minute, Andrew of Detroit.
Professor, it's so nice you're back. We missed you during your vacation, and I'm very happy to be in your class for the semester.
Thanks a lot for calling in. I appreciate all my callers.
Tune in to Matt Flynn Direct, Monday through Friday, 3 to 4 p.m.
To protect her home and family in a disaster, Karen was willing to wade through water, mud, and insurance paperwork.
Yeah, I can do this.
You go, Karen! By simply understanding and updating what her insurance covers and doesn't cover now, she'll be better prepared no matter when disaster strikes. Learn other simple ways to protect your home and family before a natural disaster at ready.gov. That's ready.gov. A message from FEMA and the Ad Council.
Morning Cannolis with James Centell is an independent product and has a joint sales agreement with Civic Media. Enjoy.
Welcome. Grab your favorite morning beverage and join us for Morning Cannolis with Jim Centell. Sampling the news desserts of the week, here is your host, Jim Centell.
Good morning and welcome to our broadcast on this wintry but delightful Saturday, December 10th. My name is Jim Centell. This is a broadcast of Civic Media. This is Morning Cannolis, our weekly, our weekend review, our analysis, our discussion of the most important stories in law, in government, and yes, the aspiration for justice in America. As always, an ambitious but highly achievable agenda this morning, a syllabus that includes everything from soup to nuts, right here in the Shaw in Waukesha, 540 AM, 101 FM. I am in those studios this morning, again, this morning, talking with you about those important issues of this past week, and also talking this morning about the future in all of those areas of law, government, justice in America, and consistent with our tradition, every single Saturday morning from 9 to 11 o'clock in the morning. We're taking your phone calls at 844-967-2789. Excellent. My outstanding producer, Calvin, is right here in the studio with me, and he will be bringing your calls into our discussion this morning as we take on many, many issues important to the life and the livelihood of the United States of America and those of us right here in the state of Wisconsin. Thank you once again for joining me. This is our 26th show. We're beginning our second six-month tranche of shows, our broadcast, and I'm delighted to be your host, as always, this morning, Saturday, December 10th. Just like last week, we're going to take a little bit different turn this morning in terms of our agenda, our syllabus. We're not going to do a specific review of the significant events in the history of our world, our nation, and our state, but instead I'm going to hearken back to one event of just 1 year ago yesterday on December 9th of 2021, just one event, and talking with you about a specific journalism event that happened on that day a year ago. Many of you recall, you know well, that Brian Williams, who was a veteran journalist and a news anchor for many, many years, the NBC Nightly News, concluded a nearly 30-year term of service with NBC News 1 year ago yesterday. And that was a part of his final broadcast called The 11th Hour at that time. It was one of my favorites because I always thought that he brought to that analysis of those stories, that review of the significant issues, many of them late-breaking right before he got on the air, a certain balance, a thoughtfulness, an attempt always to try to determine what the facts and circumstances of those events were all about, brought on people who were not necessarily had their hair on fire, certainly partisan, certainly political in many, many ways, but always trying to provide some balance about not only the present, but also the future. So a great, great admiration from me toward Brian Williams, including the time that he was in charge of the NBC Nightly News. He left. He left a year ago yesterday, and as a part of his farewell monologue on the 11th hour a year ago yesterday, Brian Williams expressed his concern for the direction of the United States of America, his nation, his country, and the country's divided politics. And then he concluded also with something that's going to be the theme of our discussion this morning, and that is an aspiration, once again, for better things, a recognition that life takes circuitous drives and movements as we go forward, but always looking forward to improving the life and our livelihood. He said this. He said this at the end of his final broadcast a year ago yesterday. He said, after 28 years of peacock logos, that, of course, a reference to the NBC peacock logo, after 28 years of peacock logos on much of what I own, it is now my choice to jump without a net into the great unknown. This again, Brian Williams. As I do for the first time in my 62 years, my biggest worry, he said, is for my country. Brian Williams went on to say this. The truth is that I'm not a liberal or a conservative, again, following up on that sense of, yes, some partisan perspective, but trying to have that balance in his show. He said, I am an institutionalist. He said, I believe in this place, talking presumably about journalism in America and maybe even NBC News. I believe in this place, and in my love of country, I yield to no one. But the darkness on the edge of town, Brian Williams said, has spread to the main roads and highways and neighborhoods. It is now at the local bar and the bowling alley, at the school board and the grocery store. And it must be acknowledged and answered for, he said. Grown men and women who swore an oath to our Constitution, elected by their constituents, possessing the kind of college degrees I could only dream of, have decided to join the mob and become something they are not, while hoping we somehow forget who they were. They decided to burn it all down with us inside, and that should scare you to no end. Those the comments, the thoughts of Brian Williams as he was departing NBC News. He went on to say, regrets, I've had a few, but then again, a few to mention. What a wonderful ride, he said, it has been. Where else, as a kid like me, could I meet presidents and kings and the occasional rock star? He went on to say, these lovely testimonials that had preceded him in this program that I can never truly repay make me hyper aware that it has been and remains a wonderful life, invoking the wonderful Jimmy Stewart movie. He said, it's as though I wake up every morning, tomorrow morning in Bedford Falls. Although tomorrow, he said, I will wake up in the America of the year 2021. A nation unrecognizable to those who came before us and sought to protect it, which is what you must do now. Let me repeat that one again. A nation, for Brian Williams and for many of us, unrecognizable to those who came before us and those who fought protect it, which is what you must do now. Again, Brian Williams talking about this darkness on the edge of town that concerned him about the future of our nation and those people who, having taken an oath, have decided, as he said, to join the mob and do some things that are contrary to that oath and contrary to the purposes of our nation. Burning it all down, he said, with all of us inside, that should scare us to no end. Now, the theme of this morning is not fear. It is not scaring you, but it is an appropriate invocation for what we're going to be talking about this morning, because there are concerns, if not, in fact, darkness at the edge of town. Nonetheless, reasons to be concerned, as there have always been, some very good things coming out of the election of early December, of November, of course, and other aspects of our nation, which we're also going to highlight in this hour and down the road, some legislative accomplishments early this year and also just these past several days. It should be heralded and embraced, but also at the same time, taking up on the invocation, the encouragement from Brian Williams to remain ever vigilant and to continue to pursue those things that our founding fathers anticipated our nation should be all about. And so it's pursuant to that commission from Brian Williams of a year ago that we're going to talk this morning about some of the challenges, some of the things that are, in fact, at the edge of town, maybe not darkness, maybe some possibilities of hope and light, but also some reasons to continue to pursue the fight to ensure that democracy is safe and secure in our nation. We're going to spend some time talking about major cases before the Supreme Court just this past week, two huge oral arguments, one involving the future of democracy. That's not hyperbole. And second, another one involving LGBTQIA rights and the intersection with the First Amendment, the possibility that the Supreme Court may carve out some exceptions to discrimination laws under a case called 303 Creative versus Linus. We're going to follow that up with some discussion this first hour, updating you and all of us on what's going on in the Mar-a-Lago investigation of the documents seized at that location of the former president. Talk about something that happened just yesterday in the federal district court having to do with contempt. We're going to talk as well about January 6th. Again, very much in the news this past week for a couple of important reasons, referrals, and of course, the special report coming out very, very shortly. All of that's all going to be a part of our first hour or so. Then in our second hour, we're going to talk about some other matters also on the agenda of our nation this past week. We know that the Trump Corporation, the Trump companies, were convicted in a state court in New York State for tax violations. This is a state felony conviction. We're going to talk about the consequences of that. What does that mean in terms of finding a corporation guilty of a state offense? We're going to talk about the consequences of that, both for the Trump Corporation and for all of us, understanding what has happened and what may happen in the future. Also going to spend some time, as I promised, talking about some other major legislation of much earlier this year, springtime of this year, having to do with the reauthorization of the Violence Against Women's Act, and also some very new and very important anti-lynching legislation, reasons to celebrate, because in fact, the United States Congress, as it did this past week in another matter involving marriage and same-sex marriage in America, passed some major legislation this past week, but also much earlier this year, having to do with major civil rights issues and the enforcement of laws and the insurance to all victims, regardless of who you are, of ensuring that you've got a say in our prosecutions in this country and providing other support for victims of crime in America. Lots to talk about this morning on Morning Cannolis. Again, our weekend analysis, our discussion, our review of those major stories in government and law and justice in our nation, the United States of America. So let's begin that discussion. And once again, as always, taking your phone calls at 844-967-2789. We're going to begin by talking about the United States Supreme Court. And we have spent a good deal of time in the last 6 months on this broadcast and other broadcasts of civic media, including just yesterday and the day before out of the very Waukesha studios in which Calvin and I are present right now. We spent a lot of time talking about major cases pending before the United States Supreme Court this term, 2022-2023. We identified about 12, maybe 13 of the major cases. As of today, the United States Supreme Court has decided to hear something just in excess of 40 cases in total. Doesn't, as you well know, is not obliged to take every single case. Many, many people want to be heard by the United States Supreme Court. They do what's called grant writs of certiorari. That's a Latin phrase, a legal phrase that basically means we're going to command the lower court to send us the record. That is their way of saying, yes, we're going to entertain this particular case, this particular contest, this challenge between parties. We're going to entertain that case. We're going to have briefs submitted by the attorneys or the parties in this matter. And we're also going to have oral argument on them. And the oral arguments, as we know, began in early October with the start of this new term, and they have continued until this past week. Supreme Court has scheduled more of those oral arguments for January, February, into the new year, and probably going to issue some major decisions in June of 2023. Right after the break, we're going to talk about the first of those major oral arguments, a case called Moore versus Harper that happened just this past week in the United States Supreme Court. Stay with us for that important discussion of this major case on the docket of America.
I'm looking at the phone lines. I'm seeing some familiar faces. What's your mind, Gene of Eau Claire?
Well, welcome back, Matt. I really miss you. We've been missing getting woke every morning, but now we'll get woke in the afternoon.
What's your mind, Andrew of Detroit?
Professor, it's so nice you're back. We missed you during your vacation, and I'm very happy to be in your class for the semester.
Thanks a lot for calling in. I appreciate all my callers.
Tune in to Matt Flynn Direct, Monday through Friday, 3 to 4 p.m.
This is the story of a very special woman. In a matter of seconds, she turned herself into a great mathematician or an entrepreneur. Her knowledge was limitless and still is. She could also make monsters disappear, especially those that lurked in the shadows under the bed. Once, this woman put back together a teenage girl's broken heart, which had been shattered in a thousand pieces, just by giving her a bear hug. She masqueraded as a regular person at work, but as a superhero at home. Everyone knows her as Gabriella. I still call her Mom.
Your hero needs you now, and AARP is here to help. Find the care guides you need to help, complete with tips and resources, at aarp.org/caregiving. A public service announcement brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw. Overcast this afternoon with a chance for scattered rain showers. Highs level off around 38. Southeasterly winds 5 to 10 miles an hour. Cloudy skies expected again tonight. Mixed precipitation possible at times. Lows around 33. High temperatures reach up to 37. Tomorrow, overcast skies. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Derek Height. Currently, it's 32 degrees.
The Shaw 101 FM. Brookfield's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at waukradio.com.
We are back. Thank you once again for joining me on this Saturday morning, December 10th, here in the studios of the Shaw in Waukesha, WAUK, 540 AM, 101 FM. As always, Kelvin and I are taking your phone calls at 844-967-2789 as we dive headfirst into a discussion this morning of two major Supreme Court cases that had their oral arguments just this past week, one on Monday, one on Wednesday. Let's start with Wednesday in particular. Those of you who listened in the past know that I've spent a lot of time talking about this case called Moore versus Harper, and proposed to you and to anyone who also will listen, family, friends, that sort of a group out there, that this is a matter for tremendous concern and attention by all Americans. How does this case come about? The petitioners in this case are some Republican leaders of the North Carolina legislature. They're upset, they're not happy that the North Carolina Supreme Court, the highest state court in North Carolina, struck down, basically invalidated the congressional map that they had drawn after the 2020 census. We did the same thing here in Wisconsin. Virtually every other state in the country did the same thing, redrawing lines based upon where the populations of our states are located. And the reason for the North Carolina Supreme Court doing that was and remains that objectively, as the court said, the North Carolina legislature had accomplished an extreme partisan gerrymander. The court found that the map violated various provisions of the North Carolina Constitution, arguably as well the Voting Rights Act, including a guarantee that all elections shall be free. That coming out again of the North Carolina Supreme Court. The court specifically found that the map violated various provisions of that Constitution, and in so doing, they did what many courts do out there, which is to review the results of line drawing by legislatures. We've had that here in Wisconsin by lower courts, certainly by the Wisconsin Supreme Court, as you well know, a bedrock principle of federalism, that the state courts have final authority over the meaning of state constitutions and laws and principles enacted pursuant to it. Other courts, including the Supreme Courts of Florida and Pennsylvania, have issued similar decisions invalidating congressional districts, and in most of those cases, the Supreme Court has not gotten involved. But the North Carolina legislature, again, unhappy with what the North Carolina Supreme Court had done, not only appealed this case, ultimately landing before the United States Supreme Court, not only did they contest this notion that somehow they engaged in an improper gerrymander by drawing the new lines in North Carolina, but they also decided to revive this long discredited, this fringe, this quite literally discredited doctrine. It's not even a doctrine, perhaps dressing it up way too much, a theory, many people say, known as the independent state legislature theory, or ISL. LT. That's a lot. It's a mouthful of language, a lot of words. But it's important to understand the theory rests, of course, as we have said, on the Constitution itself, the United States Constitution, the Elections Clause, which says that the times and places and manner of federal elections, that's important, these are federal elections, shall be prescribed in each state by the legislature thereof. Makes pretty much good sense, right? We know that the federal government doesn't come into our particular cities, our villages and towns and conduct elections. That is left to the states to establish the rules and regulations, the times, the places, the manner of those elections. Although various people from various areas and certainly vying for various spots, local spots, school board spots, county spots, state spots, and yes, federal spots are often on the same ballot. And again, the Supreme Court in the Elections Clause, as it's interpreted by the Supreme Court in the Constitution, prescribes that that's the way that's going to be done. The clause frees the state legislature from restraints imposed by the state constitution when regulating federal elections in many ways. And that's what the ISLT maintains. That's the fundamental notion. Somehow, this clause frees up the state legislature to be free from the court involvement in operating, regulating federal elections, to go further in articulating what this marginal theory is. It prevents state courts from enforcing those restraints when the legislature passes a law that violates them. So the usual checks and balances we always think about would not apply. The ISLT would effectively give the legislature power over the manner of those elections, not only to set them in the first place, but also to resolve any differences about how they're administered, but also perhaps even the selection of the winners, if you will. We've talked in past about the implications of that, and also even on the Electoral College. And of course, we know that there are a lot of problems with that theory. The legislature meant more than a specific body of elected representatives when our founding fathers put this together in 1787. The word basically for them encompassed a whole power, the entire state legislature, if you will, that makes laws. For example, a governor who can veto a congressional map. And second, the other problem with this is the legislature meant a specific political body. Even if that is the case, there is no indication that our framers understood that the courts would have no involvement in that. Just the opposite. They plainly put together a major article, Article 3 in the Constitution, that contemplates the role of courts, federal courts. And beyond that, since the start of our republic, state courts have imposed limits on election laws. We've seen that right here in the state of Wisconsin, passed by the legislature. That tradition casts doubt on this hypothesis, this doctrine, this theory, if you will, that the Election Clause contains some secret sort of sweeping limit on the authority of courts. It simply is not true. So what happened? What happened this past Wednesday when it came to the oral argument about this? Well, one of the advocates in favor, in opposition to the North Carolina legislature, supporting what the North Carolina Supreme Court had done, was a fellow named Neil Katyal. He's a former acting Solicitor General in the Department of Justice, and he talked about the blast radius from ISLT that would sow elections chaos if, in fact, the Supreme Court were to endorse this concept. The ISLT, he said, refuted by 233 years of history, that's exactly right, as I've just indicating, is rejected by the Articles of Confederation, a part of the oral argument this past week, rejected by the early state constitutions, rejected by founding practices throughout our nation, simply not a part of our tradition. And to accept that theory, he told the justices, he said this, you'd have to ignore the text, the history, and the structure of our federal constitution, as well as nearly every state constitution today. And now, he faced a lot of opposition, but also a lot of support among the Supreme Court. And right after the break, we're going to talk about how those justices came down just this past Wednesday, give you some predictions about what may or may not happen in this case. Stay with us.
The Shaw, 101 FM, WAUK, 540 AM, Waukesha's only news talk station.
Missed your favorite show live on air? It's easy to find what you enjoy wherever you listen to podcasts, including Spotify, Apple, and Google Podcasts. And we're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app.
Hey, this is Jim Santel. I am the host of Morning Cannolis. every single Saturday morning from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. We talk about the major stories in law, in government, and the aspiration for justice in America. Delighted to have you join, call in, and be a part of our discussion right here on the networks of Civic Media.
You've got questions about navigating the healthcare system? Kristen Lyerly helps us find answers and discusses other issues at the intersection of healthcare and politics. Hometown Health, Thursday mornings at 7:30 on Up North News Radio.
AP News, I'm Ben Thomas. More details on Tuesday night's mass shooting that killed six in Chesapeake, Virginia. Our Mike Hempen has them.
Investigators say the Walmart supervisor who shot and killed six co-workers left behind what he called a death note. Andre Bing blamed others for mocking him and said he wishes his parents would have paid closer attention to his social deficits. Bing also said he did not plan the shooting, but that, quote, things just fell in place like I was led by the Satan, unquote. Co-workers who survived the shooting say he was known for being difficult and for being hostile with employees. Police say Bing legally purchased the 9mm gun he used the day of the killings. He had no criminal record. Bing died at the scene of an apparent self-inflicted gunshot wound. I'm Mike Hempen.
Residents of Colorado Springs are reassessing things after last weekend's mass shooting at a gay nightclub. State Representative Leslie Harrod says she had hoped the city would have aged out of hate.
Of transphobia, of racism, of, you know, of homophobia. We're not going to just age out of it.
In fact, she says some are breeding it. Her answer?
We have to actively teach a new narrative. We have to actively embrace people who are different than us or those who are just like us and see us for who we are completely. Colorado Springs should lead that now.
In his nightly address, Ukraine's President Vladimir Zelensky says the number of people without power across the country has been halved, but that leaves 6 million still experiencing blackouts, the result of Russian strikes. NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg says the alliance's commitment to Ukraine is unwavering.
Allies are providing unprecedented military support, and I expect foreign ministers will also agree to step up non-lethal support.
COVID-19 numbers are trending upward in the U.S. The CDC's tracker shows cases and deaths on the rise. This is AP News.
You are listening to your local Civic Media radio station on air. Thank you. Did you know we are always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app too? And if you miss a show or game, find it wherever you get your podcasts or on our website, civicmedia.us.
Hey there, fellow working class heroes. I'm Rick Smith, host of The Rick Smith Show. And we are now on the air in Waukesha. Live weeknights, 8 to 10 p.m. right here on WAUK 540 AM, 101 FM, The Shaw. Turn on, tune in, and help us rebuild the American dream. Check out our website at thericksmithshow.com. The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk. Weeknights, 8 to 10 p.m. right here on WAUK 540 AM, 101 FM, The Shaw.
Being a father is an honor, a challenge, a duty, a celebration, and a testimony. I want to be legendary for you because I found everything to live for.
That's dedication. Visit fatherhood.gov to hear more. Brought to you by the...
We are back. This is Jim Santel. We're talking this morning, as we have often spoken in past broadcasts, about our United States Supreme Court and this major case involving the future of our representative democracy here in the United States of America. The case called Moore versus Harper. And right before the break, talking with you about some of the things advocated for by this fellow named Neil Katyal, the former Solicitor General of the United States of America. He was joined in that effort to talk with the justices by two other attorneys named Don Verrilli and Solicitor General Elizabeth Perlegar, both of them, all of them, arguing, of course, that this independent state legislature doctrine, this theory that is out there and animating this case coming out of North Carolina, is, in fact, appropriately rejected by the United States Supreme Court. Katyal and the others faced some fairly intense pushback from justices who we knew from past writings and observations and things that they have articulated in the public domain, probably favorable to this ISLT. Those are Justices Clarence Thomas, Neil Gorsuch, and Sam Alito. At least those three, fairly strong believers in the ISLT. Katyal and Verrilli and Preligar all pushing back on that, maintaining, as they did, effectively, from my view, that history did not support this notion and that it should properly be rejected. The real debate over all of this is exactly how much deference the Supreme Court should give to the state courts. What does this mean? Does history mean something, or should we reinterpret for the first time in about 233 years this language in the Constitution that does give authority to the state legislature to make decisions about the trappings of elections, but nonetheless not to the exclusion of the courts or other portions of government? Well, the question is, what is SCOTUS going to do about all of this? Should the deference to the courts be sky high? Should it be incredibly high? Should it be much more limited? Should the court, as an awful lot of us believe, reject this notion, jettison it completely, and go back to where we are, continue with where we are today in terms of acknowledging and embracing the role that our state courts have in adjudicating challenges to the processes of elections and also making decisions when those are appropriate about the winners, the losers, and as I said before, even about things related to electoral college. That's why this issue is so important, not just for the immediate elections here in Wisconsin and around the country, but in 2024, as we know, we're going to be electing another president, perhaps the same president, perhaps someone new, but the electoral college could arguably be affected by this adjudication of Moore versus Harper as well. In the end, as we look at votes, as I said, we've got probably three justices, Thomas, Gorsuch, and Alito, squarely on the side of supporting the ISLT, which is a concern. We also know that in the past, Brett Kavanaugh has expressed some interest in this, probably during the course of the oral argument, wrestling somewhat with, as I said, the extent to which the court should have deference to this theory, deference to the courts, balancing this, having some difficulty with it, but probably in the end coming down on the side of those other three, that is Gorsuch, Alito, and Thomas. And so there may, in fact, be at least four votes to support the North Carolina legislature and overturn the ways that we have been doing elections in this country for nearly 240 years. So the question is, what about the other justices on the Supreme Court? How did they play out during the course of this oral argument of just Wednesday of this past week? Well, we know, once again, that the three so-called liberals, Ketanji Brown Jackson, Sonia Sotomayor, and Elena Kagan, all of them expressing horror that this case is even here, which is a significant point to make. Why is our Supreme Court even taking this case on? Why are we even looking at it? And Elena Kagan herself was very articulate in describing the horrific consequences if a full-blown, full-throated invocation and description of this ISLT is adopted by the court, describing all sorts of things, some of which I mentioned again this morning, all sorts of things that could affect the impact, the meaning of your vote when you go to vote in elections for our federal representatives. The other thing that she commented about was implicitly that if you open the door to this, what other kinds of things might a Supreme Court down the road use this doctrine to expand into? Where does this go long term beyond just the North Carolina case and its import for states around the nation? But where else does it affect? What other kinds of voting, not just federal voting, might it have its tendrils into? And so she's raising all of that, Elena Kagan was. So plainly, she and her two colleagues on the so-called liberal side of the bench providing the three votes. And then we've got two others. We've got John Roberts, a Chief Justice, who again was expressing, like Kavanaugh, some level of concern about this. I suspect in the end, as do folks who are listening to the oral argument itself, that the Chief Justice, as he often tries to do, may be trying to broker some mid-level resolution of this, where there's a majority of the Supreme Court that doesn't reject it entirely, but doesn't embrace it entirely. And I'd offer to you, as did the other three, that that's a dangerous position, too. even opening the door to this and opening the possibility that it could be applied even in some middling, some incomplete way in our nation for our federal elections could be very, very problematic. But again, the Chief Justice probably now concerned, maybe in fact siding with the other three so-called liberals on the bench to make four votes in that direction. Not entirely clear. Roberts, of course, always trying to be the conciliator, tried to do that, as we know, with Dobbs, the case that overruled Roe versus Wade back in June. Unsuccessful in doing that. What would we be doing here? We don't know, but some indication that he's got concerns about this as well. And then, what does that lead to? Well, who is the Supreme Court Justice I have not spoken about up to now? Her name is Amy Coney Barrett. It appears that Amy Coney Barrett was skeptical about the arguments being made by the legislature, by the North Carolina legislature. She was pretty tough on the attorney for the legislature. She suggested that the formalistic test, that's what she called it, was unworkable. It was a stab at trying to deal with our precedent, which cut against him. She's saying that about the attorney advocating on behalf of the legislature. So putting him in a box, if you will. Lawyer for the legislature tried to draw a line in response to some of the very difficult questioning by Amy Coney Barrett between substantive and procedural issues, things that lawyers and many of you, I suspect, are also very much attuned to. Amy Coney Barrett, a former law school professor, wasn't buying any of that. She said, as a former civil procedure teacher, I can tell you that it is a hard line to draw and a hard line to teach students in that context as well. She also pointedly noted that the standards that the attorney for the state legislature was adopting for implementing the ISLT were not more manageable than the North Carolina Supreme Court standards for measuring gerrymanders, which is the real focus of all this case. It was a fairly polite way of saying on behalf of this particular Supreme Court Justice, Amy Coney Barrett, that this position was one of hypocrisy. Her questions for the other three, for Katya Alvarelli and Perligar, who again were advocating against the ISLT, were much more sympathetic, it appeared to me. She simply was asking how the court should write a decision rejecting this. So she was plainly in that vein. Strongly implied to those other lawyers that the Supreme Court did not even have jurisdiction to hear this case, and that might be a basis for its resolution as well. Overall, it sounded as if Amy Coney Barrett might, in the end, be the deciding factor. We don't know precisely how John Roberts will come down. We don't know precisely how it is that Brett Kavanaugh will come down. But the prediction as of Wednesday afternoon, after this oral argument was done, was that probably not quite as devastating as it was anticipated to be. At least three justices, again, the Chief Justice, Roberts, Kavanaugh, and then Amy Coney Barrett, all expressing some various levels of concern about this. All you need is five votes to reject it. You need five votes to embrace it as well. And so if two of those join the other three, Gorsuch and Alito and Thomas, then we've got a decision in the opposite direction. But we will wait to see. But fascinating oral argument. I commend, as I always do, your reviewing, your listening to that oral argument. It is accessible on the Supreme Court website. You can go online, pull down that folder, and they posted through the good auspices of the Chief Justice, all of the arguments of all recent presentations to the Supreme Court, including this one in Moore versus Harper. Again, we're going to wait probably about 6 months or so to determine whether or not the ISLT is adopted, changing the way in which we vote in America. What can you do? What can you do about this? Many people ask on a regular basis to many scholars who are much brighter than I, who have looked at this at much greater length than I have, what do you do about this? Well, I hearken back to the time about a year or so ago when we heard also the oral argument in Dobbs. It was very clear in December of last year the Supreme Court was about to overrule Roe versus Wade. We knew that in December, and so we had 6 months or so to wait and see. And the advocacy, of course, was legal, and it was certainly in the media. But the nation was not yet attuned to this notion that this major case, Roe versus Wade, was about to be overturned. This notion of opening the door about whether or not there's a privacy right protection in the Constitution. The seriousness of this was not known. And then we woke up, even after the release of that draft opinion in the spring, we woke up on a June morning and found that, indeed, the world had changed. And then, in many ways, the country responded to that decision. Protests, disagreements, and arguments. Now is the time, if you will. If you are concerned about democracy, concerned about what this case could mean, now is the time. I've been an advocate in the old school vein to reach out to members of the Supreme Court, write a letter to the Chief Justice, write a letter to Brett Kavanaugh, write a letter to Amy Coney Barrett, telling her that you support what she seemingly was suggesting, write a letter to her saying that she should, in fact, join those others who are reasonable and thoughtful in advocating against this ISLT and bringing it to an end. Otherwise, advocate, let people know in our nation's schools, our classrooms, talking about the significance of this so that whatever happens in June, we are not surprised. We are not, in fact, looking back and saying, gosh, I wish we had advocated for something different. The same holds for a case that was argued on Monday of this week. Again, a busy week before the United States Supreme Court. This case called 303 Creative versus Alanis. Alanis, 303 Creative versus Alanis. And in this particular case, the Supreme Court had before it a question about the intersection between religious liberties, more specifically First Amendment liberties, and laws barring discrimination based on sexual orientation. How does this come about? We have talked about this case in the past. It's worth it to revisit it because, once again, this does have significant implications for the future of not just the LGBTQIA community, but also civil rights more generally in America. How does this case come out? Well, we know that there's a woman named Lori Smith, S-M-I-T-H. She owns a design company in Colorado, and that design company provides wedding-related services by crafting, putting together, assembling websites for people who are going to get married. And it says that as a part of her process, she will engage, she will contract with you if you are going to get married, and will put that website together for you. Her position is that a Colorado law that forbids discrimination based upon sexual orientation by businesses open to the public prohibits her from exercising her First Amendment rights to be opposed to same-sex marriage. Following all of that, she alleges that her own faith, her own religious, tells her that same-sex marriage is wrong, and her particular position before the lower courts and now the United States Supreme Court in this case called Alanis is that by virtue of the application of this Colorado law to her, it basically prohibits her from expressing her views on her website that same-sex marriage is wrong, implicitly conveyed by her refusal to engage in business practices, to contract with same-sex couples in providing wedding services, specifically wedding-related websites that she would prepare for them. She is fine with celebrating the marriages of heterosexual unions and couples, but she says that requiring her to provide those services to gay and lesbian couples violates her rights to free speech. And so all of this has been the subject of lower courts. Interestingly, a lot of this has not yet been resolved because in many ways the case has not been fully developed. And so the Supreme Court oral argument of Monday of this week rested in large part about what happened here. Right before after the break, we're going to talk more about what this case meant, how the Supreme Court justices came down, and a likely prediction in June again about what the Supreme Court may do in this major civil rights case in America. Stay with us for that.
It's easy to listen to your favorite local radio station anytime. Download the Civic Media app from the Apple or Google Play Store, then listen live or whenever you want from anywhere for free.
I'm Pat Kreitlow from Up North News. On an earlier edition, we talked to three women, med students, about whether they're going to stay in Wisconsin to practice medicine.
All this Roe v. Wade stuff, and now OBGYN's hands are so tied. I don't want to go through 12 years of training to have some person that didn't do training tell me how to do my job.
It is not a binary choice. You're for or against abortion. It is a healthcare decision. We all have those stories, and people want to hear them.
Don't miss the real stories here on Up North News.
Wake up and text. Text and eat. Mm-mm. Text and meet up with a friend you haven't seen in forever.
Hi.
Oh, hey.
Text and complain that they're on their phone the whole time. Text and listen to them complain that you're on your phone the whole time. Text and whatever. But when you get behind the wheel, give your phone to a passenger. Put it in the glove box. Just don't text and drive. Visit StopTextsStopWrecks.org. A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Plenty of people start something great in their 40s and 50s. Getting your retirement savings on track is no different. Go to aceyourretirement.org and in 3 minutes you'll get personalized tips to help boost your retirement savings. That's aceyourretirement.org. A message from AARP and the Ad Council.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw. Highs level off around 38. This afternoon, under cloudy skies, with a chance for scattered rain showers. Winds out of the southeast, 5 to 10 miles an hour. Cloudy skies expected again tonight. Mixed precipitation possible at times. Lows dip down to about 33. Daytime highs approaching 37. Tomorrow, cloudy skies expected. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Derek Height. Currently, it's 32 degrees.
The Shaw 101 FM, your fix for progressive talk from Big Bend to Menominee Falls. Always streaming at waukradio.com.
We are back. We are talking this morning about the United States Supreme Court. And right before the break, we began to chat about this case called 303 Creative versus Alanis, this very important case affecting religious liberties, free speech liberties, and the intersection with laws barring discrimination based upon sexual orientation and gender identity. We know that this case comes before the Supreme Court in the wake of another one that you certainly recall well. This is the so-called cake shop case coming out of Colorado as well. 303 Creative, in very many ways, is a sequel to that earlier case. In that case, a case called Masterpiece Cake Shop versus Colorado Civil Rights Commission, that was in 2018. In that case, the claim was that the First Amendment permitted a Colorado baker to refuse to bake a wedding cake for a same-sex couple because that baker's cakes were a form of artistic expression. So you'll call that well. The Supreme Court, in the end, seemingly wrestling with, again, this intersection between First Amendment rights, religious rights, and the rights to be free from discrimination. In the end, the Supreme Court sent the case back to the Colorado Civil Rights Commission, finding they didn't particularly care for the way in which the Colorado Rights Commission failed to grant an exemption under the Colorado law. It has to do with a lot of legal intersections of the law and process here. And so the decision was never really rendered, never really wrestled with in a way that resulted in a clear-cut opinion about which is the higher, more important proposition. What about the First Amendment right to free speech? What about the First Amendment right to religious liberty, as opposed to the equally compelling right of all Americans, including those in the LGBTQ community, be free from discrimination when it comes to commercial enterprises and contracting? And so it is back before the United States Supreme Court in this case called Alanis, 303 Creative versus Alanis. What do we know about the Supreme Court oral argument on Monday? Once again, let's chat about how the Supreme Court justices came down. And unlike Moore versus Harper, where there's some reason to believe Supreme Court will reject this crazy idea about the courts not being involved in federal dispositions of challenges in federal elections, here, it is increasingly clear that the Supreme Court is likely going to side in favor of this web designer who has said that she's got a free speech right. and a right to discriminate against the LGBT community. So let's talk about how the Supreme Court may, in fact, get there. We know that a lot of the justices focus on the difference between a client's message and that of the designer. Neil Gorsuch, for example, said that's really at the heart of a lot of this. He was referring to the question of whether the speech at issue was, as he said, expressing the maker's point of view or the couple's point of view. Justice Brett Kavanaugh, sort of on the same side, if you will, different take, exploring the difference between businesses engaged in expression and ones simply selling goods out there in the community. This is what Brett Kavanaugh said. He said the case comes down to a fairly narrow question. Are they more like restaurants and the jewelers and the tailors? He said, suggesting that those businesses are not engaged in protected speech. Or are they more like, you know, the publishing houses and other free speech analogs? Wrestling with that as well, asking some questions about the attorneys presenting this case. Amy Coney Barrett, we spent a lot of time talking about her response a couple of days later in the Moore case. She had a lot to say about this case on Monday. She said, it's about the message and not about the sexuality of the couple. She went on to say that line-drawing questions in this case were difficult, which they presumably are, and that where the court drew them would be consequential. She said, however we decide this case obviously applies to others. And again, indicating that somewhat sympathetic to the web designer and her position that the Colorado law imposes upon her an unconstitutional restriction on her First Amendment rights. Let's talk about what the others said. Sam Alito said that there was a difference between discrimination based on race versus sexual orientation. In particular, he asked whether it's fair to equate opposition to same-sex marriage with opposition to interracial marriage. He noted, he observed from the bench that Justice Kennedy's majority opinion that established a constitutional right to same-sex marriage in 2015. You may recall that that's the Obergefell case, Obergefell versus Hodges, basically said that honorable people opposed such unions on religious grounds. This is Justice Alito talking about Justice Kennedy's position. The court's three liberals, of course, expressed great qualms, great concerns about the damage that a ruling in favor of the designer could do to gay rights, to LGBT rights, to be free from discrimination, and to combat discrimination. Sonia Sotomayor, among those three, said this. She said, this would be the first time in the court's history that the court may, in fact, rule that a commercial business open to the public, serving the public, that it could refuse to serve a customer based on race, sex, religion, or sexual orientation. Again, indicating that you open the door to this and you've got the possibility that many, many other implications will flow. A huge implication that she is identifying here. She also joined the others, playing the Elena Kagan and Ketanji Brown Jackson, in opposing this notion that somehow these things have got to be resolved in favor of a clear and unequivocal free speech right vested in this website designer. My own view is, as I've said before, that these things can, in fact, be reconciled. A lot of people, myself included, feel strongly that we're not asking this website designer or other people in commercial enterprise to give up their religious beliefs, their spiritual beliefs, however those may be founded, wherever those may come from. But we are, in fact, asking you, and we have throughout the last half century or so, if even more than that, provided in this nation that people of all immutable characteristics, including those regarding sexual orientation, gender identity, race, national origin, ability, disability, familial status, economic status, all sorts of things, all those immutable characteristics should not be the focus, should not be the targets of discrimination. And that's what the Colorado law is all about. And so my own view, and I think it is the view of those justices who were siding with the state of Colorado, that these things can be reconciled without compelling anyone to give up their views, however founded or unfounded those might be. The concern, of course, is, as Justice Kagan said, this really depends on the facts of the case, and some of those facts are not especially clear. There has not been a clear invocation of this Colorado law with respect to this provider of website services, And so, as Justice Kagan said, it depends on exactly what Ms. Smith is being asked or compelled to do, and that matters, she said. And we have a case without any of that in it. She was basically bemoaning the fact that the record in this matter, even though the subject of review in the lower court has not yet been developed fully, because you don't have this case and controversy situation. Ketanji Brown Jackson joined in that, and she said that this case asked whether the shopping mall that wanted to mimic the atmosphere of the movie It's a Wonderful Life could refuse to include children who are not white in its pictures with Santa. So lots of hypotheticals out there, again, indicating that the three so-called liberals, Ketanji Brown Jackson, Elena Kagan, and Sonia Sotomayor, plainly opposed to this, but probably we are headed in the direction of a Supreme Court on some basis looking to support the website designer, and we'll see once again what that looks like in June. Come back after our hour-long...
Hey sis, missed you this morning. Kim told me you weren't feeling well, so I'm just doing a self-care check.
Oh, thank you, friend.
How you doing?
Girl, listen, my energy was so low because I didn't eat breakfast when I got up, so I had to miss virtual yoga with y'all.
Trust me, I understand.
But I'm doing much better now that I've eaten, so I'm back on track.
Great. In that case, let's get some steps in tonight. I'll come over and we can walk around the lake.
Sounds good. Appreciate you being in my business, too. Now, let me get in yours. Did you check your blood pressure today?
I did that and my squats, okay?
Okay.
High blood pressure is not going to be my friend if I can help it. See you at 6?
Let's get it. See you then.
Now more than ever, it's important that we protect our hearts and the hearts of those we love. Check in on one another and be a part of a healthy blood pressure movement. Rally Your Squad to take the online pledge at releasethepressure.org. Brought to you by the Release the Pressure Coalition and the Ad Council.
You are listening to WAUK 540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, always streaming on the